chapter, verses 2 to 11. And in the 11th verse, you'll notice that the prophet Joel identifies this army that he was speaking about as the Lord's great army. And as you review the exploits of this army in these verses, perhaps you begin to wonder if the prophet had erred in calling it the Lord's great army. How could this army be associated with the Lord with the behavior that he had described? And yet the prophet was correct in naming this as the Lord's great army. But this Lord's great army would be called that only in the sense that it would be doing a work of destruction under the direction of the Lord. And so from this aspect, it is called the Lord's great army. Now we all know from the divine plan that this old order is to pass away, is to be destroyed, and that revolution and anarchy are going to be the tools with which the Lord is going to use to destroy this order. And it is this great army of his that has been assigned as the wrecking crew to demolish this old order. And this old order is certainly to be torn down, but under the direction of the Lord. Now this army is going to work in total ignorance, not knowing that it is actually accomplishing God's work. But the real army of the Lord, the saints, are certainly not connected in any shape or form with this great army. They are fighting, yes, yet another battle, but not connected in any way with this great army that we're speaking about. Now, for many years, the Lord's people have endeavored to identify this great army of the Lord. And the sure word of prophecy indicated that this army would be formed during this time of trouble. And the events of our day, I think, forcibly assure us that the army of the Lord is not only on the scene, but it is already in action. The voice of the Lord is certainly directing its movements, and the one objective it has is to destroy this old order. Now the prophet Joel in verse 2, chapter 2, provides a setting for us. He calls it a day of darkness, a day of gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness, as the warning spreads upon the mountains. Of course, the language is symbolic. But notice, especially if you will, the words, as the warning spreads upon the mountains. Now we all recognize what mountains are in symbolic language. And certainly we are living in the morning of this day that Joel is speaking about. This is indeed the millennial morning. And indeed, this millennial morning is indeed shining upon all of the mountains of the earth. And as this morning spreads, the prophet is saying it is preceded by a time of trouble. And though this is the day, the morning, Joel declares it will be a day of trouble, thick darkness, yea, severe trouble. And in this environment, the prophet says, will emerge this great army of the Lord. Something that never existed before. Consider now verse 4. And here Joel describes how this army appeared to him. Reading from the Revised Version. Their appearance is like the appearance of horses, and like war horses they run. Now perhaps Joel was thinking here of Job's description of a war horse. And if you ever want to see a wonderful description of a war horse, turn to Job chapter 39 and there verses 19 to 25. Job describes a war horse. And some of the characteristics of this war horse was that he was fearless, he was strong, he was fierce, and he was itching to go into battle. And these are the same characteristics that this great army of the Lord will have. They too are going to be strong. They're going to be fearless and fierce, ready for a fight. And then in the fifth verse, Joel likens this army to rumbling. And he says that these chariots will be jumping, as it were, from mountain to mountain throughout the earth. Mountains symbolize kingdoms. This would indicate that the battle cry of this army would be heard throughout all of the kingdoms of the world. Chariots symbolize a vehicle of war. And certainly, these vehicles of war have been heard throughout the entire world as they begin bouncing from kingdom, mountain to mountain. As all going on, Joel records the of the land.
Verse 6.
Revised version.
That is before this army. Peoples are in anguish.
And all faces grow pale.
And certainly as you analyze this passage, indeed the faces of the people are becoming pale. Certainly you can detect the anguish that is found in these faces as they recognize the beginnings of this great army ready to march. Now let us consider the actual signs of the times in light of Joel's prophecy. I think one of the blessings that we enjoy in this harvest period is the fulfillment of prophecy in the events of the day. This is something that many of the Lord's people were not able to see, the fulfillment of prophecy at this end of the age. But as all these rays of prophecy converge upon this one period, you and I have become recipients of watching the prophecy being fulfilled. Now, what events do we recognize in the world that confirm the formation of this army and that they are actually in action? We believe that the shift in age proportions in Earth's population has much to do with the formation of this army. The United Nations issued this significant report. It said that 54% of the world's population was under 25 years of age in the 1965 census. Young people cannot therefore be dismissed as a minority group. And since then, that percentage has gone up. Now what does this mean? Notice, if you will, the timing by God in this population age, providing a special type of recruit that is required to fight in this army. This year, 7.6 million young people are going to seek degrees from the schools. Indeed, there is a generation gap. And I think this generation gap is enveloping the entire world. And this generation gap, I think, has brought anguish to millions of American parents and educators. It's also becoming a very definite problem in Russia. And as a result of the predominance of youth, we have coined this expression that we call youth rebellion. And it is this youth rebellion that is hacking away, as it were, at the glue that holds this society together. And that glue is made up of many things. Government, law, schools, family, religion, police. In short, all things that exercise authority in one form or another. When you destroy the control of authority, a natural sequence follows. And that is, anarchy will begin to come to the surface. And the attack on authority is really the common threat that is running through this youth rebellion as it spreads throughout the world. Now, this youth rebellion has indeed gained great momentum in the educational systems of the world. Indeed, the college campuses have become violent with rebellion. And today we have a worldwide student rebellion. And the very thing that the world had put their faith in, education, has actually backfired. They thought by educating all of these people that blessings would be coming forth. But this is not happening. It is interesting to observe that the objectives of this student revolt differs from country to country. In the United States, violence is generated by militant left-wing students, and their attack is on war, the war in Vietnam, the draft, and student power as a goal. And this was followed, you remember, by militant Negroes. They demanded a curriculum in black studies. They wanted to be separate and so on. But notice, as you analyze this, these are common only to our country, the United States. And so the question arises is, if there's a student revolt throughout the world, what is bothering students in countries outside of our country, the United States? After all, they have no racial disturbances. Their emotions certainly aren't coming from that quarter. Now, in connection with this worldwide student revolt and its activities, consider, if you will, Joel's words, the 9th verse, chapter 2. And I'm going to read from the Moffat translation. They rush on the city, run over the walls, climb into the houses, and enter the windows like thieves. Now, a city pictures an organized arrangement. A wall is a protective element around this organized arrangement. And this law could be in a form of authority, which could be a protective wall. The police, as such, also could be a wall around this organized society. And so the question is, what are the students doing? What have they done? Well, certainly they have rushed upon this organized arrangement. They have actually run over these walls, the protective elements that are guarding this organized arrangement. And certainly the wall of law has not held them back. The police wall has not been able to check them. They shall climb up on the houses. Now, a city is composed of many houses. And a house is a residence, and it could be used for many things. It could serve as living quarters, as we know a house today. It can be a place where laws are being made. We use the expression, the House of Representatives. But it could also be a house of learning. And we refer to the colleges and the universities. And so the question is, what have the students done to these houses of learning? Certainly they've climbed into these houses to gain recognition. And then Joel adds, they shall enter into these houses how? Not by a door, but like a thief going in through the window. And anyone that enters a house other than by a door is considered a thief. And so if you enter a house by a window, you are a thief. And so what have these students done? Certainly they've invaded these houses of learning by the windows, illegal entries, to gain control. And many times they've not only seized the building, but actually destroyed some. Certainly, it looked like a war at the University of Wisconsin last month, when a bomb set off an explosion causing some $6 million worth of damage. And last May, 450 schools were hit by strikes and boycotts. Many schools were closed. And the presidents of the American colleges and universities are preparing, in their own words, the possibility of war. And the schools are going to open in just a few weeks. And it's easy to become a demolition expert in America. Underground newspapers print detailed instructions as how to get materials and construct the bomb. So it seems that today, students are violating the old standards. They discard the old values. They ignore the old precepts. They're impatient with the failing democratic processes of this country. Now the question comes, how extensive is this student revolt? It is worldwide. Listen to these clippings. London, England. Rebel students working through a left-wing anarchistic type organization are trying to build up a campaign of sit-ins and demonstrations at universities throughout Britain. There are 475,000 students in the universities and colleges in Great Britain alone. Paris, France. Student protests in France are marked by pitched battles at the universities. More than 600,000 compete for seats in overcrowded facilities. Militant minorities are revolting against the entire consumer society. Madrid, Spain. Student rebellion has reached a point where the government has declared a nationwide emergency, and the Madrid University's big campus looks like an armed camp with hundreds of police in battle array. Bonn, Germany. After 3 years of revolutionary clamor, West German students are more disorganized, and the attitude of the student leaders toward Washington and Moscow are dismissed as untrustworthy bosses of the establishment. A little closer home, Ottawa, Canada. Student revolutionaries in Canada include all the new leftist groups, from anarchists to the milder types of socialists. Down below, Mexico City. Mexico students revolted on a nationwide scale. There was a major gun battle with the army in Mexico City, and casualties on both sides were very heavy. Across the water, New Delhi, India. India's rebellious students can match any country in violence. Campus after campus has been closed down, and university enrollment in India is now more than, listen to this, 1.2 million compared to 350,000 in 1948. Karachi, Pakistan. Surging unrest among students in Pakistan is now mixed up with demonstrations against government. Hundreds injured in street fights between students using stones and government troops using guns and tear gas. One more. Tokyo, Japan. 117 campuses have been torn by disputes, trouble at 67 universities, 19 are paralyzed by student boycotts, and it required a police force, mind you, of 8,500 policemen to evict radical students from 24 buildings of the Tokyo University, and they had occupied these buildings for 7 months. They shall invade or take possession by window. And so all around the world, you have this student rebellion, and it is growing in strength and violence, and this has never happened before. And Joel confirms this in just so many words. Listen to a statement in verse 2, chapter 2. There hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it. Now these rebelling students are indeed only one segment of this huge army of the Lord. One of the battle cries that we hear from another segment of the Lord's people, of the Lord's army, is the fact that they want to tear this establishment down. And you hear this often. Down with this establishment. And isn't this exactly in line with the Lord's program? Down with this establishment? Of course. It is rotten to the core. It has to give way. This battle cry simply means that they have no respect for those who control society today. This establishment in the United States includes the government with all of its ramifications, includes the fighting forces of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and so on. This establishment also takes in this educational system and includes all the various forms of government throughout the world. Now, this present establishment, this order of things, has a certain wall of protection around it. It has laws, it has regulations, and it is enforced by the army, by the police, and so on. And perhaps it is this protective aspect that Joel describes as a wall in verse 7. They shall climb the wall like men of war. Now in the old days, when men of war went over the wall that protected a city, it simply meant that the inhabitants were now defenseless. As long as the wall was there, they were protected. But once the enemy got on top of the wall, now they were able to have command of the city. One wall that the revolutionaries are now attacking, especially of late, is the police wall. Authorities fear that there's going to be a wholesale guerrilla warfare. One official in Washington, in a very key position, made this statement. Unless something is done to reverse the present trend, this country is going to be in a civil war within 5 years. In Washington, D.C., an underground newspaper called the Quicksilver Times reprinted an article from the Black Panther newspaper which gave specific instructions as how to make grenades, where to obtain the material, and how they're constructed. And in this same article, there was following a map showing the locations of all the police stations, all the law enforcement agencies, the detective agencies, and the National Guard headquarters, all spelled out in detail. In other words, this wall is being attacked. In Chicago, 7 policemen killed this year, 750 injured. In New York City, attacks on policemen running at a monthly rate of 300 per month. And the guerrilla leaders, black and white, are claiming that violent revolution has actually begun here in America. And the cry is, kill the police. Because this is a wall that's interfering with their operations. Yes, the walls that protect this establishment are being attacked. In the latter part of verse 7, notice the prophet speaks of the Lord's army being divided into various divisions. They shall march everyone on his ways, and they shall not break their ranks. Now what did the prophet mean? They shall march everyone on his ways, and they shall not break their ranks. Perhaps Joel was indicating that this army would be composed of many dissatisfied people, and each would pursue a certain course of action depending on his area of dissatisfaction. But all would be working together, as it were, undermining this flimsy foundation on which this establishment rests. Each one from a various angle attacking, weakening this foundation. And so Joel is saying this will not break their ranks, the fact that there are divisions, but instead it'll solidify them, as it were, in that grand objective that they have, is to break down, to tear down this old establishment. Now in this Lord's army, you will find many divisions. And some even take on a special name. Now this is common in army life. You'll have a division, perhaps, in some form or other, they excel in something, and they'll give themselves a nickname. And this is also true in the Lord's army here. An example of this is the SDS. The Students for the Democratic Society. This is a special group. But as you trace its very beginning up until this very day, it has certainly grown in numbers and grown in power. Millions of Americans became aware of the objectives of SDS through a nationwide TV program called Face the Nation. It was on this program that the National Secretary of the SDS criticized the American system as racist, capitalist, and imperialist. Now mind you, this is on an American TV station. Here was this individual criticizing the United States government. And he advocated student radicals to arm themselves and to revolt. And on this program, he was asked this question. Why is the SDS stirring so much revolt in the campuses of this country? Here was his reply. We've come to understand that the university is very much a part of this system that we live under. A system based upon racism, the capitalistic system, exploitation of people's labor. This whole system of exploitation has been reinforced by the university. Then he went on to say that the SDS is part of an international movement. And he went continuing, he says, we all see ourselves fighting for a common struggle, oppressed peoples all over the world. Why? Because the system that we are up against, he said, is an international system, a system of exploitation. This same organization, the SDS, has now invaded the high schools. And they're calling the students of the high schools to set fires to trash cans, to turn in fire alarms, to grow long hair, to wear strange clothing, all with signs indicating their protest against this establishment. This is only the one segment of the Lord's great army that has been assigned the task of tearing down this establishment. Again, the prophet's words. They shall march everyone on his ways. Each one has a particular axe to grind going in his direction, but they're all converging, as it were, into this foundation that is holding up the system. Now let us observe another division of the Lord's army that is on the march. And that is the revolt in the armed forces. Now the author of the Studies in the Scriptures, Volume 4, hinted of this condition. But what is the situation today? The military establishment is now beset by cases of mutiny, cases of disobedience, racial strife, and desertion. And should this continue, the defense planners are talking, they are convinced that this military establishment in this country will amount to just a little more than an armed rebel. And the attack against the military appears to be part of a wider offense against the entire social structure of this country. There has never been anything like it in American history. Today, there are 50 underground newspapers edited by servicemen, and they're being published right near the military bases. In addition, there are at least 4 major anti-military, anti-establishment newspapers published in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and these are all given free to servicemen. And then, the Army is confronted with a type of draftee extremely rare in the country's experience. And it is a man who refuses to pledge allegiance to this United States and refuses to fight. And these men are indeed becoming a problem to the Army. Still another problem area for the Army is desertion. In 1968, 39,299 men deserted the Army. This is equivalent to 2.5 infantry. And then in the area of discipline, one ranking Army officer had this to say. Our whole educational system now interprets military service as a burden rather than a responsibility. Since the military establishment is by its very nature undemocratic, it arouses resentment among individuals who are taught that they have only rights and no duties. One more serious threat to the armed forces, and that is the use of drugs. Investigators were told that as high as 80% of military personnel are involved in drug use. How long do you think an army of that kind will operate with the required discipline? Let's return now to Joel's prophecy. Let's consider verse 8 of chapter 2, and I'm going to read from the Revised Version. They do not jostle one another. Each marches in his path. They burst through the weapons and are not halted. Notice, if you will, in particular the words, each marches in his individual path. Each group, each division has a particular gripe, and it seeks to correct that gripe. The student radicals take one path. The black power militants still take another. The anti-war demonstrations have another. The labor champions still have another. Each marching in his own individual path. And the point that the prophet is making is that though they are marching in each individual path, these many segments, they will not jostle one against another because of this common objective. In other words, they will not interfere with each other. They will not rebel against each other because they have this one objective. Consider now another outstanding legion in this Lord's army, and I refer to the black race of the United States. This is the only country in the world to have a very serious race problem. This segment of the Lord's army, as you have traced its movements, has grown in numbers and in power. And now it is expressing itself in violence. And in this new turmoil, I believe that the law of retribution is playing a part. When this country was in its formative stages, as you read your history, you remember that these people were brought in as slaves. A civil war was fought, and one of the issues revolved around the Negro. But for many decades, the Negro was exploited. He was oppressed. But now the law of retribution begins to act. The Negro now is demanding a place in the sun. And the shrill cry of justice is heard throughout all the land. And it's the Negro that is making that cry. Yes, the Negro refuses to wait for action. He's demanding the blessings of life right now. Notice, if you will, again, the timing of God. The increase of knowledge that these Negroes for centuries, yes, they've been held down because they knew no better. But as education, the light of education began to shine, they began to realize that they also are people. They also have rights. And so this increase of knowledge has indeed set off this spark of rebellion against this organized establishment. Notice these prophetic words by Joel in the 8th verse. They burst through the weapons, and they shall not be halted. And certainly there have been attempts to hold back this segment of the Lord's army, but what has happened? They had to backtrack, and nothing can hold them back. They have to take care of the assignment given to them by the Lord. They have burst through these weapons, and they will not be halted until their work is finished. Now let us consider verse 10 of Joel 2. The earth shall quake before them, that is, before this army. The heavens shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. Again, Joel resorts to symbolic language, and interpretation, of course, is necessary to obtain the import. And we have the language of symbols well in mind, I'm sure. The earth shall quake before them. We've learned that the earth is a symbol of the social order. And today, as you well know, present society is already quaking, shaking, as this great army moves in this direction. But then Joel says, not only the earth, society in general is going to quake, but then Joel says also that the heavens are going to tremble. And heavens, again, in symbolic language, spiritual powers of churchianity. And today, Christendom is indeed trembling. And part of the Lord's great army are those who have been restrained, those that have been held in check by ignorance, by superstition, by fear. But now again, as this light of knowledge, this increase of knowledge begins to shine, then these restraining influences of religion will begin to lose ground. Now many knew that the Bible was just saturated with breathtaking ideas about love, about justice, and a concern for those who were suffering. And yet, the performance of the church down through the centuries fell far short of all these biblical ideas that the clergy had expounded. The Bible said one thing, but the clergy interpreted it much different. And so when the knowledge began to shine, these began to realize that there's a difference. In other words, organized religion has been under attack by the youth rebellion also. The Roman Catholic publication, The New World, in a survey of Catholics on Chicago area campuses found, this is what the students actually confessed, they were interviewed, and the students of these Catholic universities right in our area, Chicago area, they said that they scoff at angels, they scoff at rosaries, holy water is just plain water, and they tell you that the words of prayer, confession, and sin are not part of their vocabulary. Now these are students attending a Catholic university. How much respect does Catholic youth have for the founder of Christianity? Listen to this. A poll was conducted by the St. Anthony Messenger. This is a national Catholic magazine. 325 young men and women, 1969 graduates, of 15 Catholic colleges in the United States were asked to name 5 persons whom they admired and consider outstanding. How do you think that went? The selections were in this order. First, the late J.F. Kennedy. Second, his brother Robert Kennedy. Third, Martin Luther King. Fourth, Pope John. Fifth, Jesus Christ. These are Catholic men and women attending a Catholic university. And Jesus Christ is fifth on their list. Youth is rebelling against the church, and is not the church also part of this establishment or this system? Of course. Today, churchianity is being forced to consider something that they have never been told to consider before, and that is reparations. Not so long ago, radical Negro leader James Forman presented the Black Manifesto, and this he struck right at the National Council of Churches right in New York City. And this black manifesto is addressed to the white Christian churches and the Jewish synagogues in the United States. And it demanded $500 million in reparations. And since then, the demand rose to $3 million. And even with $3 billion, it is stated that this is only the beginning. But here's the interesting part. This manifesto said that this money will be used to overthrow capitalism and the United States government. This black manifesto has been felt by every church in this land. In Chicago, a newspaper carried this article, following heading, 20 Northside churches agree to pay reparations to the blacks. Now, part of this black manifesto reads thusly. Listen to this. Pressure by whatever means necessary should be applied to the white power structure of the racist white Christian churches and the Jewish synagogues. We call for total disruption of selected church-sponsored agencies operating anywhere in the United States and the world. We encourage the blacks to seize the offices, telephones, printing apparatus of all church-sponsored agencies and to hold these until our demands are met. And to win our demands, we will have to declare war on the white churches and the synagogues. And then the slogan of this black manifesto reads, "All roads lead to revolution." The heavens are going to tremble. Are they trembling? And so, as part of the Lord's great army, it begins to challenge these religious institutions. And the powers of the spiritual heavens are going to be indeed mystified. The ones who control the heavens, who have neglected God's plan as revealed in His Word, have submitted their own plan. For centuries they've been going along, everything seemed to be going along fine. All of a sudden, this turn of events. Certainly they're going to be surprised as to why. And to them, the Lord's action is going to be indeed a strange work. The prophet Isaiah speaks of this, Isaiah 28, verses 21, 22. "For the Lord shall rise up, he shall be wroth, that he may do his work, his strange work, his strange act, to bring to pass. For I have heard a decree." Of what? Of destruction. From who? From the Lord God, upon who? Upon the whole land. What is this strange act of God? The Lord has permitted the world to take its own course, yes, for the last 6,000 years. He has permitted this long reign of sin, selfishness, and death. But He had a reason for it. Because He could overrule it for other important features of His wonderful plan. God, during this period, accomplishes two important things. First, this environment of sin and death was absolutely necessary for the development of His church. No other conditions would do the work of development such as these. It was necessary. And second, mankind, by being exposed to sin and death, would learn the results of the exceeding sinfulness of sin. Now, what it means to live under these conditions. And this strange act of the Lord spoken of by Isaiah will be manifest by God's interference into man's course. God's deliberate intervention is indeed going to be peculiar. It's going to be strange. To who? To those who do not understand what he is doing. But to those who understand, they are just waiting for this time. Yes, God in his wisdom proposes a general discipline for mankind before he gives the next lesson. God is an excellent teacher, and certain lessons follow in sequence. And first of all, mankind must learn certain lessons before it gets the next lesson. And that next lesson, after they find out what sin is, will be the practical illustration of the benefits of righteousness under a new type of regime, the messianic arrangement. Again, the prophet Joel, chapter 2, verse 11, Fenton translation. Thus the Lord utters his voice at the head of his army. His encampment is spread very wide, and his order works strongly. And great is the day of the Lord, and terrible, who can abide it? And so we can see that the Lord is the head of this. But then Joel says, not only the earth, society in general is going to quake, but then Joel says also that the heavens are going to tremble. And heavens, again, in symbolic language, spiritual powers of churchianity. And today, Christendom is indeed trembling.